Book 10. Will you then, my soul, never be good and simple, and one and naked, more manifest than the body which surrounds you? Will you never enjoy an affectionate and contented disposition? Will you never be full and without a want of any kind, longing for nothing more, nor desiring anything, either animate or inanimate, for the enjoyment of pleasures? Nor yet desiring time wherein you shall have longer enjoyment, or place, or pleasant climate, or society of men with whom you may live in harmony. But will you be satisfied with your present condition, and pleased with all that is about you? And will you convince yourself that you have everything, and that it comes from the gods, that everything is well for you, and will be well whatever shall please them? And whatever they shall give for the conservation of the perfect living being, the good and just and beautiful, which generates and holds together all things, and contains and embraces all things, which are dissolved for the production of other like things. Will you never be such that you shall so dwell in community with gods and men, as neither to find fault with them at all, nor be condemned by them? Observe what your nature requires, so far as you are governed by nature only. Then do it and accept it. If your nature, so far as you are a living being, shall not be made worse by it. And next you must observe what your nature requires, so far as you are a living being. And all this you may allow yourself, if your nature, so far as you are a rational animal, shall not be made worse by it. But the rational animal is consequently also a social and thus political animal. Use these rules, then, and trouble yourself about nothing else. Everything which happens either happens in such wise as you are formed by nature to bear it, or as you are not formed by nature to bear it. If then it happens to you in such a way as you are formed by nature to bear it, do not complain, but bear it as you are formed by nature to bear it. But if it happens in such wise as you are not formed by nature to bear it, do not complain, for it will perish after it has consumed you. Remember, however, that you are formed by nature to bear everything that in your opinion either can or must be made endurable and tolerable, by deliberating whether it is in your interest or your duty to bear it. If a man is mistaken, instruct him kindly and show him his error. But if you are not able, blame yourself, or do not blame even yourself. Whatever may happen to you, it was prepared for you from all eternity, and the implication of causes was from eternity spinning the thread of your being, and of that which is incident to it. Whether the universe is a concourse of atoms or nature is a system, let this first be established, that I am a part of the whole which is governed by nature. Next, I am in a manner intimately related to the parts which are of the same kind with myself. For remembering this, inasmuch as I am a part, I shall be discontented with none of the things which are assigned to me out of the whole. For nothing is injurious to the part, if it is for the advantage of the whole. For the whole contains nothing which is not for its advantage, and all natures indeed have this common principle. But the nature of the universe has this principle besides, that it cannot be compelled even by any external cause to generate anything harmful to itself. By remembering, then, that I am a part of such a whole, I shall be content with everything that happens. And inasmuch as I am in a manner intimately related to the parts which are of the same kind with myself, I shall do nothing unsocial, but I shall rather direct myself to the things which are of the same kind with myself. And I shall turn my efforts to the common interest, and divert them from the contrary. Now if these things are done so, life must flow on happily, just as you may observe that the life of a citizen is happy, who continues a course of action which is advantageous to his fellow citizens, and is content with whatever the state may assign to him. The parts of the whole, everything I mean, which is naturally comprehended in the universe, must of necessity perish. But let this be understood in this sense, that they must undergo change. But if this is naturally both an evil and a necessity for the parts, the whole would not continue to exist in a good condition, the parts being subject to change and constituted so as to perish in various ways. For whether did nature herself design to do evil to the things which are parts of herself, and to make them subject to evil, and of necessity fall into evil, or have such results happened without her knowing it? Both these suppositions indeed are incredible, but even if one were to drop the term nature, meaning the presiding spirit and power of the universe, and should speak of these things as natural in the sense of normal, even then it would be ridiculous to affirm that the parts of the whole are in their nature subject to change, and at the same time to be surprised or vexed, as if something were happening contrary to nature when they undergo change, particularly as the dissolution of things is into those things of which each thing is composed. For there is either a dispersion of the elements out of which everything has been compounded, or a conversion, a change from the solid to the earthy, and from the spirituous to the aerial, so that these parts are taken back into the universal reason, whether this at certain periods is consumed by fire or renewed by eternal changes. And do not imagine that the solid and the airy part belong to you from the time of your birth. For all this received its accretion only yesterday and the day before, as one may say, from the food eaten and the air breathed in. This, then, which has received the accretion, changes, not that which your mother brought forth. But even allowing that the part of you your mother brought forth is very closely associated with that other part, the accretions, which have the peculiar quality of change, this is nothing, in fact, in the way of objection to what has been said. When you have assumed these names, good, modest, true, rational, a man of equanimity and magnanimous, take care that you do not lose the right to these names, and if you should lose them, quickly regain them. And remember that the term rational was intended to signify a discriminating attention to every several thing and freedom from negligence, and that equanimity is the voluntary acceptance of the things which are assigned to you by the common nature, and that magnanimity is the elevation of the intelligent part above the pleasurable or painful sensations of the flesh, and above that poor thing called fame, and death, and all such things. If then you maintain yourself in the possession of these names, without desiring to be called by these names by others, you will be another person, and will enter on another life. For to continue to be such as you have hitherto been, and to be torn in pieces and defiled in such a life, is the character of a very stupid man, and one over fond of his life, and like those half-devoured fighters with wild beasts, who, though covered with wounds and gore, still entreat to be kept to the following day, though they will be exposed in the same state to the same claws and bites. Therefore fix yourself in the possession of these few names, and if you are able to abide in them, abide as if you were removed to the Elysian fields, or those islands called by some the Isles of the Blessed, or Happy. But if you perceive that you fall out of them, and do not maintain your hold, go courageously into some nook where you shall maintain them, or even depart at once from life, not in passion, but with simplicity and freedom and modesty. After doing this one laudable thing at least in your life, to have gone out of it thus, for the remembrance of these names, it will greatly help you if you remember the gods, and that they wish not to be flattered, but wish all reasonable beings to be made like themselves. And if you remember that what does the work of a fig tree is a fig tree, and that what does the work of a dog is a dog, and that what does the work of a bee is a bee, and that what does the work of a man is a man. The fripperies of home, the wars abroad, disquietude, torpor, the slavery of ordinary life, will daily wipe out those holy principles of yours. How many things are there that without studying their nature did you overlook and neglect? But it is your duty in everything to join action and thought, so that at the same time the power of dealing with circumstances is perfected, and the contemplative faculty is exercised, and the confidence which comes from the knowledge of each several thing is maintained, without showing it, but yet not concealed. For when will you enjoy simplicity, when gravity, and when the knowledge of every several thing, both what it is in substance, and what place it has in the universe, and how long it is formed to exist, and of what things it is compounded, and to whom it can belong, and who are able both to give it and take it away? A spider is proud when it has caught a fly, and a man when he has caught a poor hare, and another man when he has taken a little fish in a net, and another when he has taken wild boars, and another when he has taken bears, and another when he has taken sarmatians. Are not all these robbers, if you examine their opinions, their intentions? Acquire the contemplative way of seeing how all things change into one another, and constantly attend to it, and exercise yourself about this part of philosophy. For nothing is so much adapted to produce magnanimity. And he has freed himself from the bonds of his body who achieves this, and he sees that he must, no one knows how soon, go away from among men, and leave everything here. He gives himself up entirely to doing the just in all his actions, and in everything else that happens he resigns himself to the universal nature. But as to what any man shall say or think about him, or do against him, he never even thinks of it, being himself contented with these two things, with acting justly in what he now does, and being satisfied with what is now assigned to him. And he lays aside all distracting and busy pursuits, and desires nothing else than to accomplish the straight course through the law, and by accomplishing the straight course, to follow God. What need is there of suspicious fear, since it is in your power to inquire what ought to be done? And if you see clear, go by this way content, without turning back. But if you do not see clear, stop and take the best advisers. But if any other things oppose you, go on according to your powers with due consideration, keeping to that which appears to be just. For it is best to reach this object, and if you do fail, let your failure be in attempting this. He who follows reason in all things is both tranquil and active at the same time, and also cheerful and collected. Inquire of yourself as soon as you wake from sleep, whether it will make any difference to you if another does what is just and right. It will make no difference. You have not forgotten, I suppose, what kind of men they are who assume arrogant airs in bestowing their praise or blame on others, what they are like when they are at bed and at board. And you have not forgotten what they do, and what they avoid, and what they pursue, and how they steal, and how they rob, not with hands and feet, but with their most valuable part, their mind, by means of which there is produced, when a man chooses, fidelity, modesty, truth, law, and a good spirit. To her who gives and takes back all, to nature, the man who is instructed and modest says, "Give what you will, take back what you will." And he says this not proudly, but obediently and well pleased with her. Short is the little which remains to you of life. Live as on a mountain, for it makes no difference whether a man lives there or here, if he regards the whole world as one city. Let men see, let them know a real man who lives according to nature. If they cannot endure him, let them kill him, for that is better than to live thus as those men do. No longer talk at all about the kind of man that a good man ought to be, but be such. Constantly contemplate the whole of time and the whole of substance, and consider that all individual things, as to substance, are a grain of a fig, and as to time, the turning of a gimlet. Look at everything that exists, and observe that it is already in dissolution and in change, and as it were putrefaction or dispersion, or that everything is so constituted by nature as to die. Consider what men are when they are eating, sleeping, procreating, easing themselves, and so forth. Then what kind of men they are when they are imperious and arrogant, or angry and scolding from their elevated place. But a short time ago, to how many they were slavish, and for what things? And after a little time, consider in what a condition they will be. That is for the good of each thing which the universal nature brings to each, and it is for its good at the time when nature brings it. The poet says, "The earth loves the shower," and "the majestic sky loves the earth." This argues affection between them. And the universe loves to make whatever is about to be. I say then to the universe that I love as you love. And is not this too said, that this or that loves to be produced? Either you live here and have already accustomed yourself to it, or you are going away, and this was your own will, or you are dying and have discharged your duty. But besides these things, there is nothing. Be of good cheer, then. Let this always be plain to you, that this piece of land is like any other, and that all things here are the same as if you were on the top of a mountain, or on the seashore, or wherever you choose to be. For you will find just what Plato says, dwelling within the walls of a city as in a shepherd's fold on a mountain. What is my ruling faculty, my governing sense, my reason now to me? And of what nature am I now making it? And for what purpose am I now using it? Is it void of understanding? Is it loosed and rent asunder from social life? Is it melted into and mixed with the poor flesh so as to move together with it? He who flies from his master is a runaway, but the law is a master, so he who breaks the law is a runaway. And he also who is grieved or angry or afraid is dissatisfied because something has been or is or shall be of the things which are appointed by him who rules all things, and he is law, and assigns to every man what is fit for that person. He then who fears or is grieved or is angry is a runaway. A man deposits seed in a womb and goes away, and then another cause takes it, and labours on it and makes a child. What a thing from such a material! Again, the child passes food down through the throat, and then another cause takes it, and makes perception and motion, and in fine, it becomes life and strength and other things. How many and how strange! Observe then the things which are produced in such a hidden way, and see the power just as we see the power which carries things downwards and upwards, not with the eyes, but still no less plainly. Constantly consider how all things, such as they now are, in time past also were, and consider that they will be the same again, and place before your eyes entire dramas and stages of the same form. Whatever you have learned from your experience or from older history, for example, the whole court of Hadrian, and the whole court of Antoninus, and the whole court of Philip, Alexander, Croesus, for all those were such dramas as we see now, only with different actors. Imagine every man who is grieved at anything, or discontented, to be like a pig which is sacrificed and kicks and screams. Like this pig also is he who on his bed in silence laments the bonds in which we are held. And consider that only to the rational animal is it given to follow voluntarily what happens, but simply to follow is a necessity imposed on all. Severally, on the occasion of everything that you do, pause and ask yourself if death is a dreadful thing because it deprives you of this. When you are offended at any man's fault, forthwith turn to yourself and reflect in what like manner you do err yourself. For example, in thinking that money is a good thing, or pleasure, or a bit of reputation and the like. For by attending to this, you will quickly forget your anger, if this consideration also is added, that the man is compelled. For what else could he do? Or if you are able, take away from him the compulsion. When you have seen Satyron the Socratic, think of either Eutyches or Hymen. And when you have seen Euphrates, think of Eutychion or Silvanus. And when you have seen Alciphron, think of Tropeophorus. And when you have seen Xenophon, think of Crito or Severus. And when you have looked on yourself, think of any other Caesar. And in the case of everyone, do in like manner. Then let this thought be in your mind. Where then are those men? Nowhere, or nobody knows where. For thus continuously you will look at human things as smoke and nothing at all, especially if you reflect at the same time that what has once changed will never exist again in the infinite duration of time. But you, in what a brief space of time is your existence? And why are you not content to pass through this short time in an orderly way? What matter and opportunity for your activity are you avoiding? For what else are all these things, except exercises for the reason, when it has viewed carefully and by examination into their nature the things which happen in life? Persevere, then, until you shall have made these things your own, as the stomach which is strengthened makes all things its own, as the blazing fire makes flame and brightness out of everything that is thrown into it. Let it not be in any man's power to say truly of you that you are not simple, or that you are not good. But let him be a liar whoever shall think anything of this kind about you. And this is altogether in your power. For who is he that shall hinder you from being good and simple? Do you only determine to live no longer, unless you shall be such? For neither does reason allow you to live, if you are not such. What is that which, as to this material, our life, can be done or said in the way most conformable to reason? For whatever this may be, it is in your power to do it, or to say it, and do not make excuses that you are hindered. You will not cease to lament till your mind is in such a condition that, what luxury is to those who enjoy pleasure, such shall be to you in the matter which is subjected and presented to you, the doing of the things which are conformable to man's constitution. For a man ought to consider as an enjoyment everything which it is in his power to do according to his own nature. And it is in his power everywhere. Now, it is not given to a cylinder to move everywhere by its own motion, nor yet to water, nor to fire, nor to anything else which is governed by nature or an irrational soul. For the things which check them and stand in the way are many. But intelligence and reason are able to go through everything that opposes them, and in such manner as they are formed by nature, and as they choose. Place before your eyes this facility with which the reason will be carried through all things, as fire upwards, as a stone downwards, as a cylinder down an inclined surface, and seek for nothing further. For all other obstacles or hindrances either affect the body only, which is a dead thing, or, except through opinion and reasons yielding to it, they do not crush nor do any harm of any kind. For if they did, he who felt it would immediately become bad. Now in the case of all things which have a certain constitution, whatever harm may happen to any of them, that which is so affected becomes consequently worse. But in the like case, a man becomes both better, if one may say so, and more worthy of praise, by making a right use of these accidents. And finally, remember that nothing harms him who is really a citizen, which does not harm the state, nor yet does anything harm the state which does not harm the law. And of these things which are called misfortunes, not one harms the law. What then does not harm the law, does not harm either state or citizen. To him who is penetrated by true principles, even the briefest and most common precept is sufficient to remind him that he should be free from grief and fear. For example, the wind scatters one year's leaves on the ground. So it is with the race of men. Leaves also are your children, and leaves too are they who cry out as if they were worthy of credit and bestow their praise, or on the contrary curse, or secretly blame and sneer. And leaves in like manner are those who shall receive and transmit a man's fame to after times. For all such things as these are produced in the season of spring, as the poet says. Then the wind casts them down, then the forest produces other leaves in their places. But a brief existence is common to all things, and yet you avoid and pursue all things as if they would be eternal. A little time, and you shall close your eyes, and him who has attended you to your grave, another soon will lament. The healthy eye ought to see all visible things, and not to say, I wish for green things, for this is the condition of a diseased eye. And the healthy hearing and smelling ought to be ready to perceive all that can be heard and smelled. And the healthy stomach ought to be with respect to all food, just as the mill with respect to all things which it is formed to grind. And accordingly the healthy understanding ought to be prepared for everything which happens. But that which says, Let my dear children live, and let all men praise whatever I may do, is an eye which seeks for green things, or teeth which seek for soft things. There is no man so fortunate that there shall not be by him when he is dying some who are pleased with what is going to happen. Suppose that he was a good and wise man, will there not be at last someone to say to himself, Let us at last breathe freely, being relieved from this schoolmaster. It is true that he was harsh to none of us, but I perceive that he tacitly condemns us. This is what is said of a good man, but in our own case how many other things are there for which there are many who wish to get rid of us? You will consider this, then, when you are dying, and you will depart more contentedly by reflecting thus. I am going away from such a life in which even my associates, in behalf of whom I have striven so much, prayed and cared, themselves wish me to depart, hoping perchance to get some little advantage by it. Why then should a man cling to a longer stay here? Do not, however, for this reason go away less kindly disposed to them, but preserving your own character, and friendly and benevolent and mild, and on the other hand not as if you were torn away, but as when a man dies a quiet death, the poor soul is easily separated from the body. Such also ought your departure from men to be, for nature united you to them and associated you. But does she now dissolve the union? Well, I am separated as from kinsmen, not, however, dragged resisting, but without compulsion, for this too is one of the things according to nature. Accustom yourself as much as possible on the occasion of anything being done by any person to inquire with yourself, For what object is this man doing this? But begin with yourself and examine yourself first. Remember that this which pulls the strings is the thing which is hidden within. This is the power of persuasion. This is life. This, if one may say so, is man. In contemplating yourself, never include the vessel which surrounds you and these instruments which are attached about it. For they are like a workman's axe, differing only in this that they grow to the body. For indeed there is no more use in these parts, without the cause which moves and checks them, than in the weaver's shuttle, and the writer's pen, and the driver's whip. Book 11. These are the properties of the rational soul. It sees itself, analyzes itself, and makes itself such as it chooses. The fruit which it bears itself enjoys, for the fruits of plants and that in animals which corresponds to fruits others enjoy. It obtains its own end, wherever the limit of life may be fixed. Not as in a dance and in a play and in such like things, where the whole action is incomplete if anything cuts it short, but in every part and wherever it may be stopped, it makes what has been set before it full and complete, so that it can say, I have what is my own. And further, it traverses the whole universe and the surrounding vacuum, and surveys its form, and it extends itself into the infinity of time, and embraces and comprehends the periodical renovation of all things, and it comprehends that those who come after us will see nothing new, nor have those before us seen anything more, but in a manner he who is 40 years old, if he has any understanding at all, has seen by virtue of the uniformity that prevails all things which have been and all that will be. This too is a property of the rational soul, love of one's neighbour, and truth and modesty, and to value nothing more than itself, which is also the property of law. Thus then right reason differs not at all from the reason of justice. You will set little value on pleasing songs or on graceful dancing or on the skills of the wrestlers if you disentangle the melody of the voice into its several sounds and ask yourself as to each separate part if you are delighted by this, for you will be ashamed to admit that. The same is true in the matter of dancing, if at each movement and attitude you did the same, and the like also in the matter of the wrestling. In all things, then, except virtue and the acts of virtue, remember to apply yourself to their several parts, and by this division to come to value them little, and apply this rule also to your whole life. What a soul that is which is ready, if at any moment it must be separated from the body, and ready either to be extinguished, or dispersed, or continue to exist. But so that this readiness comes from a man's own judgment, not from mere obstinacy, as with the Christians, but considerately and with dignity, and in a way to persuade another, without tragic show. Have I done something for the general interest? Well, then, I have had my reward. Let this always be present to your mind, and never stop doing such good. What is your art? To be good. And how is this accomplished well, except by general principles, some about the nature of the universe, and others about the proper constitution of man? At first, tragedies were brought on the stage as means of reminding men of the things which happened to them, and that it is according to nature for things to happen so, and that if you are delighted with what is shown on the stage, you should not be troubled with that which takes place on the larger stage. For you see that these things must be accomplished thus, and that even they bear them, who cry out, O Kithaeron! And indeed some things are said well by the dramatic writers, of which kind is the following especially. Me and my children, if the gods neglect, this has its reason too. And again, there is nothing gained by raging at the external things themselves. And life's harvest reaped like the wheat's fruitful ear. And other things of the same kind. After tragedy, the old comedy was introduced, which had a magisterial freedom of speech, and by its very plainness of speaking, was useful in reminding men to beware of insolence, and for this purpose too Diogenes used to take from these writers. But as to the middle comedy which came next, observe what it was, and again, for what object the new comedy was introduced, which gradually sunk down into a mere mimic artifice. That some good things are said even by these writers, everybody knows, but the whole plan of such poetry and dramaturgy, to what end does it look? How plain does it appear that there is not another condition of life so well suited for philosophizing as this in which you now happen to be engaged in. A branch cut off from the adjacent branch must of necessity be cut off from the whole tree also. So too a man, when he is separated from another man, has fallen off from the whole social community. Now as to a branch, another cuts it off, but a man by his own act separates himself from his neighbour when he hates him and turns away from him, and he does not know that he has at the same time cut himself off from the whole social system. Yet he has this privilege certainly from Zeus, who framed society, for it is in our power to grow again to that which is near to us, and to become a part which helps to make up the whole. However, if it often happens, this kind of separation, it makes it difficult for that which detaches itself to be brought to unity and to be restored to its former condition. Finally, the branch, which from the first grew together with the tree and has continued to have one life with it, is not like that which is always being cut off and then grafted. And this is something like what the gardeners mean when they say that it grows with the rest of the tree, but that it has not the same mind with it. As those who try to stand in your way when you are proceeding according to right reason will not be able to turn you aside from your proper action, so neither let them drive you from your benevolent feelings towards them, but be on your guard equally in both matters, not only in the matter of steady judgment and action, but also in the matter of gentleness towards those who try to hinder or otherwise trouble you. For this also is a weakness, to be vexed at them, as well as to be diverted from your course of action, and to give way through fear. For both are equally deserters from their post, the man who does it through fear, and the man who is alienated from him who is by nature a kinsman and a friend. There is no nature which is inferior to art, for the arts imitate the nature of things. But if this is so, that nature which is the most perfect and the most comprehensive of all natures cannot fall short of the skill of art. Now all arts do the inferior things for the sake of the superior, therefore the universal nature does so too. And indeed, hence is the origin of justice, and in justice the other virtues have their foundation. For justice will not be observed if we either care for indifferent things, or are easily deceived and careless and changeable. If the things do not come to you, the pursuits and avoidances of which disturb you, still in a manner you go to them. Let then your judgment about them be at rest, and they will remain quiet, and you will not be seen either pursuing or avoiding. The spherical form of the soul maintains its figure when it is neither extended towards any object, nor contracted inwards, nor dispersed, nor sinks down, but is illuminated by light, by which it sees the truth of all things, and the truth which is in itself. Suppose any man shall despise me, let him look to that himself. But I will look to this, that I be not discovered doing or saying anything deserving of contempt. Shall any man hate me? Let him look to it. But I will be mild and benevolent towards every man, and ready to show even him his mistake, not reproachfully, nor yet as making a display of my endurance, but nobly and honestly, like the great Phocion, unless indeed he only assumed it. For the interior parts ought to be such, and a man ought to be seen by the gods neither dissatisfied with anything nor complaining. For what evil is it to you if you are now doing what is agreeable to your own nature, and are satisfied with that which at this moment is suitable to the nature of the universe, since you are a human being placed at your post in order that what is for the common advantage may be done in some way? Men despise one another, and yet flatter one another. and men wish to raise themselves above one another and still crouch before one another. How unsound and insincere is he who says, "I have determined to deal with you in a fair way. What are you doing, man? There is no occasion to give this notice. It will soon show itself by acts." The voice ought to be plainly written on the forehead. Such as a man's character is, he immediately shows it in his eyes, just as he who is beloved forthwith reads everything in the eyes of lovers. The man who is honest and good ought to be exactly like a man who smells strong, so that the bystander, as soon as he comes near him, must smell whether he chews or not. But the affectation of simplicity is like a crooked stick. Nothing is more disgraceful than a false friendship. Avoid this wolfish friendship most of all. The good and simple and benevolent show all these things in the eyes, and there is no mistaking. As to living in the best way, this power is in the soul, if it be indifferent to things which are indifferent. And it will be indifferent if it looks on each of these things separately and altogether, and if it remembers that not one of them produces in us an opinion about itself, nor comes to us. But these things remain immovable, and it is we ourselves who produce the judgments about them, and, as we may say, write them in ourselves, it being in our power not to write them, and it being in our power, if perchance these judgments have imperceptibly got admission to our minds, to wipe them out. And if we remember also that such attention will only be for a short time, and then life will be at an end. Besides, what trouble is there at all in doing this? For if these things are according to nature, rejoice in them, and they will be easy to you. But if contrary to nature, seek what is conformable to your own nature, and strive towards this, even if it bring no reputation, for every man is allowed to seek his own good. Consider whence each thing is come, and of what it consists, and into what it changes, and what kind of a thing it will be when it has changed, and that it will sustain no harm. If any have offended against you, consider first, what is my relation to them, and that we are made for one another, and in another respect I was made to be set over them, as a ram over the flock or a bull over the herd. But examine the matter from first principles, from this. If all things are not mere atoms, it is nature which orders all things. If this is so, the inferior things exist for the sake of the superior, and these for the sake of one another. Second, consider what kind of men they are at table, in bed, and so forth, and particularly how much they are under compulsions in respect of their opinions and beliefs. And as to their acts, consider with what pride they do what they do. Third, that if men do rightly what they do, we ought not to be displeased, but if they do not right, it is plain that they do so involuntarily and in ignorance. For as every soul is unwillingly deprived of the truth, so also is it unwillingly deprived of the power of behaving to each man according to his deserts. Accordingly, men are pained when they are called unjust, ungrateful, and greedy, and in a word, wrongdoers to their neighbours. Fourth, consider that you also do many things wrong, and that you are a man like others, and if you do abstain from certain faults, still you have the disposition to commit them, though either through cowardice or concern about reputation or some such mean motive, you do abstain from such faults. Fifth, consider that you do not even understand whether men are doing wrong or not, for many things are done with a certain reference to circumstances. And in short, a man must learn a great deal to enable him to pass a correct judgment on another man's acts. Sixth, consider when you are much vexed or grieved that man's life is only a moment, and after a short time we are all laid out dead. Seventh, that it is not men's acts which disturb us, for those acts have their foundation in men's ruling principles, but it is our own opinions which disturb us. Take away these opinions, then, and resolve to dismiss your judgment about an act as if it were something grievous, and your anger is gone. How then shall I take away these opinions? By reflecting that no wrongful act of another brings shame on you. For if you allow anything else to be evil than those things that are shameful, you may fall into wrongdoing to avoid these evils, and become a thief or someone of the worst character to achieve your worldly aims. 8th. Consider how much more pain is brought on us as a result of the anger and vexation caused by such acts than by the acts themselves, at which we were angry and vexed. 9th. Consider that a good disposition is invincible if it be genuine and not an affected smile and acting a part. For what will the most violent man do to you if you continue to be of a kind disposition towards him? And if, as opportunity offers, you gently admonish him and calmly correct his errors at the very time when he is trying to do you harm, saying, "Not so, my child, we are constituted by nature for something else. I shall certainly not be injured, but you are injuring yourself, my child," and show him with gentle tact and by general principles that this is so, and that even bees do not do as he does, nor any animals which are formed by nature to be gregarious. And you must do this neither with any double meaning nor in the way of reproach, but affectionately and without any rancour in your soul, and not as if you were lecturing him, nor yet that any bystander may admire, but meant for him alone, even if others are present. Remember these 9 rules as if you had received them as a gift from the Muses, and begin at last to be a man while you live. But you must equally avoid flattering men and being vexed at them, for both are unsocial and lead to harm. And let this truth be present to you in the excitement of anger, that to be moved by passion is not manly, but that mildness and gentleness, as they are more agreeable to human nature, so also are they more manly. And he who possesses these qualities possesses strength, nerves, and courage, and not the man who is subject to fits of passion and discontent. For in the same degree in which a man's mind is nearer to freedom from all passion, in the same degree also is it nearer to strength. And as the sense of pain is a characteristic of weakness, so also is anger. For he who yields to pain and he who yields to anger, both are wounded and both submit. But if you will, receive also a 10th present from the leader of the Muses, Apollo. And it is this, that to expect bad men not to do wrong is madness. For he who expects this desires an impossibility. And to allow men to behave so to others, and to expect them not to do you any wrong, is irrational and tyrannical. There are 4 principal aberrations of the superior faculty, the soul, against which you should be constantly on your guard: rash agreement, anger, insincerity, and lust. When you have detected them, you should wipe them out and say on each occasion thus, "This thought is not necessary. This tends to destroy social union. This which you are going to say comes not from the real thoughts." For you should consider it among the most absurd of things for a man not to speak from his real thoughts. But the 4th is when you shall reproach yourself the most, for this is an evidence of the diviner part within you being overpowered and yielding to the less honourable and to the perishable part, the body, and to its gross pleasures. Your aerial part and all the fiery parts which are mingled in you, though by nature they have an upward tendency, still in obedience to the disposition of the universe, they are overpowered here in the compound mass, the body. And also the whole of the earthy part in you, and the watery, though their tendency is downward, still are raised up and occupy a position which is not their natural one. In this manner, then, the elemental parts obey the universal, for when they have been fixed in any place, perforce they remain there until again the universal shall sound the signal for dissolution. Is it not then strange that your intelligent part only should be disobedient and discontented with its own place, and yet no force is imposed on it, but only those things which are conformable to its nature. Still it does not submit, but is carried in the opposite direction. For the movement towards injustice and intemperance, and to anger and grief and fear and sensuality, is nothing else than the act of one who deviates from nature. And also, when the ruling faculty is discontented with anything that happens, then it too deserts its post. For it is constituted for piety and reverence towards the gods, no less than for justice. For these qualities also are comprehended under the generic term of contentment with the constitution of things, and indeed they are prior to acts of justice. He who has not one and always the same object in life cannot be one and the same all through his life. But what I have said is not enough, unless this also is added, what this object ought to be. For as there is not the same opinion about all the things which in some way or other are considered by the majority to be good, but only about some certain things, that is, things which concern the common interest, so also ought we to propose to ourselves an object which shall be of a common kind, social and political. For he who directs all his own efforts to this object will make all his acts alike, and thus will always be the same. Think of the country mouse and of the town mouse, and of the alarm and trepidation of the town mouse. Socrates used to call the opinions of the many by the name of lamiae, bugbears to frighten children. The Lacedaemonians at their public spectacles used to set seats in the shade for strangers, but themselves sat down anywhere. Socrates excused himself to Perdiccas for not going to him, saying, "It is because I would not perish by the worst of all ends, that is, I would not receive a favour and then be unable to return it." In the writings even of Epicurus there was this precept, constantly to think of some one of the men of former times who practised virtue. The Pythagoreans bid us in the morning look to the heavens that we may be reminded of those bodies which continually do the same things, and in the same manner perform their work, and also be reminded of their purity and nudity, for there is no veil over a star. Consider what a man Socrates was when he dressed himself in a skin, after Xanthippe had taken his cloak and gone out, and what Socrates said to his friends who were ashamed of him and drew back from him when they saw him dressed thus. Neither in writing nor in reading will you be able to lay down rules for others before you shall have first learned to obey rules yourself. Much more is this so in life. As the saying is, a slave you are, free speech is not for you. From Homer, and my heart laughed within me. From Hesiod, and virtue they will curse, speaking harsh words. To look for the fig in winter is a madman's act. Such is he who hopes for a child when it is no longer to be granted. When a man kisses his child, said Epictetus, he should whisper to himself, "Tomorrow, perchance, you will die." But those are words of bad omen. No word is a word of bad omen, said Epictetus, which expresses any work of nature. Or if it is so, it is also a word of bad omen to speak of the ears of corn being reaped. The unripe grape, the ripe bunch, the dried grape, all are changes, not into nothing, but into something which exists not yet. No man can rob us of our free will, Epictetus also said. A man must discover an art with respect to giving his assent, and in respect to his inclinations he must be careful that they be made with regard to circumstances, that they be consistent with social interests, that they have regard to the value of the object, and as to sensual desire, he should altogether keep away from it, and as to aversion, he should not show it with respect to anything which is not in his power. The dispute, then, he said, is not about any common matter, but about being mad or not. Mad as the vulgar are who have no philosophy, or not as those who are wise and virtuous are. Socrates used to say, "What do you want? Souls of rational men or irrational?" "Souls of rational men, of course." "Of what kind of rational men? Sound or unsound?" "Sound." "Why then do you not seek for them?" "Because we have them already." "Why then do you fight and quarrel?" Book 12. All those things at which you wish to arrive by a circuitous road, you can have now, if you do not refuse them to yourself. That is, if you will take no notice of all the past and trust the future to providence, and direct the present only conformably to piety and justice. Conformably to piety, that you may be content with the lot which is assigned to you, for nature designed it for you and you for it. Conformably to justice, that you may always speak the truth freely and without disguise, and do the things which are agreeable to law and according to the worth of each. And let neither another man's wickedness hinder you, nor opinion, nor voice, nor yet the sensations of the poor flesh which has grown about you. Let that which suffers see to itself. If then, whenever the time may be when you shall be near to your departure, neglecting everything else, you shall respect only your mind, your ruling faculty, and the divinity within you, and if you shall be afraid not because you must sometime cease to live, but if you shall fear never to have begun to live according to nature, then you will be a man worthy of the universe which has produced you, and you will cease to be a stranger in your native land, and to wonder at things which happen daily as if they were something unexpected, and to be dependent on this or that. God sees the minds and understanding of all men, bared of the material vesture and rind and impurities. For with his intellectual part alone he touches the intelligence only, which has flowed out and been derived from himself. And if you also can do this, you will rid yourself of much trouble. For he who regards not the poor flesh which envelops him, surely will not trouble himself by looking after raiment and dwelling, and fame and such like externals and show. You are composed of three things: a little body, a little breath, and your mind. Of these, the first two are yours only so far as it is your duty to take care of them, but the third alone is properly yours. Therefore, if you separate from yourself, that is, from your understanding, whatever others do or say, and whatever you have done or said yourself, and whatever future things trouble you because they may happen, and whatever, in the body which envelops you, or in the breath of life, which is by nature associated with the body, is attached to you, independent of your will, and whatever the external circumfluent vortex whirls round, so that the intellectual power exempt from the things of fate can live pure and free by itself, doing what is just and accepting what happens and saying the truth. If you will separate, I say, from this ruling faculty, this intelligence, the things which are attached to it by the impressions of sense, and the things of time to come and of time that is past, and will make yourself like Empedocles' sphere, all round and in its joyous rest reposing, and if you shall strive to live only what is really your life, that is the present, then you will be able to pass that portion of life which remains for you up to the time of your death, free from perturbations, nobly, and obedient to the spirit that is within you. I have often wondered how it is that every man loves himself more than all the rest of men, but yet sets less value on his own opinion of himself than on the opinion of others. For if a god or a wise teacher should present himself to a man and bid him to think of nothing that he would not express as soon as he conceived it, he could not endure it even for a single day. So much more respect have we to what our neighbours think of us than to what we shall think of ourselves. How can it be that the gods, after having arranged all things well and benevolently for mankind, have overlooked this alone, that some men, and very good men, and men who, as we may say, have had most communion with the divinity, and through pious acts and religious observances, have been most intimate with the divinity, when they have once died, should never exist again, but should be completely extinguished. But if this is so, be assured that if it ought to have been otherwise, the gods would have done it. For if it were just, it would also be possible, and if it were according to nature, nature would have had it so. But because it is not so, if in fact it is not so, be you convinced that it ought not to have been so. For you see even of yourself that in this inquiry you are disputing with the deity. And we should not thus dispute with the gods, unless they were most excellent and most just. But since they are so, they would not have allowed anything in the ordering of the universe to be neglected unjustly and irrationally. Practice even in those things which you despair of accomplishing. For even the left hand, which is ineffectual for all other things for want of practice, holds the bridle more vigorously than the right hand, for it has been practiced in this. Consider in what condition, both in body and soul, a man should be when he is overtaken by death, and consider the shortness of life, the boundless abyss of time, past and future, the feebleness of all matter. Contemplate the essence of things, their forms, bare of their coverings, the purposes of actions. Consider what pain is in itself, what pleasure is, and death and fame. Who is to himself the cause of his uneasiness? How no man is hindered by another, that everything is opinion. In the application of your principles, you must be like the pancratiast, who wrestles and boxes not like the gladiator. For if the gladiator lets fall the sword which he uses, he is doomed. But the other always has his hand, and needs to do nothing else than use it. See what things are in themselves, dividing them into matter, form, and purpose. What a power man has to do nothing except what God will approve, and to accept all that God may give him. With respect to that which happens conformably to nature, we ought to blame neither gods, for they do nothing wrong either voluntarily or involuntarily, nor men, for they do nothing wrong except involuntarily. Consequently, we should blame nobody. How ridiculous and strange he is who is surprised at anything which happens in life. Either there is a fate, which may be utter necessity and invincible order, or a kind and placable providence, or a confusion without a purpose and without any governing hand. If then there is an invincible necessity, why do you resist? But if there is a providence which allows itself to be propitiated, make yourself worthy of the help of the divinity. If there is a confusion without governor, be content that in such a tempest you have in yourself a certain ruling intelligence, and even if the tempest carry you away, let it carry away the poor flesh, the poor breath, everything else, for the intelligence at least it will not carry away. Does the light of the lamp shine without losing its splendour until it is extinguished? And shall the truth which is in you, and justice and temperance, be extinguished before your death? When a man has presented the appearance of having done wrong, say, how then do I know if this is a wrongful act? And even if he has done wrong, how do I know that he has not condemned himself? And so this is like tearing his own face. Consider that he who would not have the bad man do wrong is like the man who would not have the fig tree to bear juice in the figs, and the infants to cry, and the horse to neigh, and whatever else must of necessity be. For what must a man do who has such a character? If then you are irritable, cure this man's disposition. If it is not right, do not do it. If it is not true, do not say it. In everything that presents itself to you, always resolve it by dividing it into its form or essence, its material, its purpose, and the time within which it must end. perceive at last that you have in you something better and more divine than the things which cause the various emotions, and as it were pull you by strings. What is there now in my mind? Is it fear, or suspicion, or desire, or anything of the kind? First, do nothing inconsiderately, nor without a purpose. Second, make your acts refer to nothing else than to a social end. Consider that before long you will be nobody and nowhere, nor will any of the things exist which you now see, nor any of those who are now living. For all things are formed by nature to change, and be turned and to perish in order that other things, in continuous succession, may exist. Consider that everything is opinion, and opinion is in your power. Take away, then, when you choose your opinion, and like a mariner who has doubled the promontory, you will find calm, everything stable and a waveless bay. Any activity, whatever it may be, when it has ceased at its proper time, suffers no evil because it has ceased. Nor does he who has done this act suffer any evil because the act has ceased. In like manner, then, the whole which consists of all the acts, which is our life, if it cease at its proper time, suffers no evil because it has ceased. Nor he who has terminated this series at the proper time, has he been ill dealt with. But the proper time and the limit is fixed by nature, sometimes, as in old age, the peculiar nature of man, but always the universal nature, by the change of whose parts the whole universe continues ever young and perfect. And everything which is useful to the universal is always good and in season. Therefore the termination of life for every man is no evil, because neither is it shameful, since it is both independent of the will and not opposed to the general interest. But it is good, since it is seasonable and profitable to, and congruent with the universal. So in this way too is he moved by the Deity, who is moved in the same manner with the Deity, and moved towards the same things in his mind. These three principles you must have in readiness. Do nothing either inconsiderately or otherwise than as justice herself would act, but with respect to what may happen to you from without, consider that it happens either by chance or according to providence, and you must neither blame chance nor accuse providence. Second, consider what every being is from the seed to the time of its receiving a soul, and from the reception of a soul to the giving back of the same, and of what things every being is compounded, and into what things it is resolved. Third, if you should suddenly be raised up above the earth, and should look down on human things, and observe how great is the variety of them, and at the same time also should see at a glance how great is the number of beings who dwell around in the air and the ether, consider that as often as you should be raised up, you would see the same things, sameness of form and shortness of duration. Are these things to be so proud and pompous about? Cast away opinion, and you are saved. Who then hinders you from casting it away? When you are troubled about anything, you have forgotten this, that all things happen according to the universal nature, and forgotten this, that a man's wrongful act is nothing to you, and further you have forgotten this, that everything which happens always happens so, and will happen so, and now happens so everywhere. Forgotten this, too, how close is the kinship between a man and the whole human race, for it is a community, not of a little blood or seed, but of intelligence. And you have forgotten this, too, that every man's intelligence is a god and flows from the Deity, and forgotten this, that nothing is a man's own, but that his child and his body and his very soul came from the Deity. Forgotten this, that everything is opinion. And lastly, you have forgotten that every man only lives at the present instant, and at death can lose only this moment. Constantly bring to your recollection those who have complained greatly about anything, those who have been most conspicuous by the greatest fame, or misfortunes, or enmities, or fortunes of any kind. Then think where they are all now. Smoke and ash and a tail, or not even a tail. And let there be present to your mind also everything of this sort, how Fabius Catilinus lived in the country, and Lucius Lupus in his gardens, and Stertinius at Baiae, and Tiberius at Capreae, and Rufus at Velia. And in fine, think of the eager pursuit of anything conjoined with pride, and how worthless everything is after which men violently strain, and how much more philosophical it is for a man, in the opportunities presented to him, to show himself just, temperate, obedient to the gods, and to do this with all simplicity. For the pride which is proud of its want of pride is the most intolerable of all. To those who ask, "Where have you seen the gods, or how do you comprehend that they exist and so worship them?" I answer, in the first place, they may be seen even with the eyes. In the second place, neither have I seen even my own soul, and yet I honour it. Thus, then, with respect to the gods, from what I constantly experience of their power, from this I comprehend that they exist, and I venerate them. In this is the happiness of life, to examine everything all through, what it is itself, what is its material, what the form, the essential part, with all your soul to do justice and to say the truth. What remains except to enjoy life by joining one good thing to another, so as not to leave even the smallest intervals between? There is one light of the sun, though it is interrupted by walls, mountains, and other things infinite. There is one common substance, though it is distributed among countless bodies which have their several qualities. There is one soul, though it is distributed among infinite natures and essences. There is one intelligent soul, though it seems to be divided. Now these things which have been mentioned, which are mere air and matter, are without sensation, and therefore have no fellowship. And yet even for these parts the intelligent principle and gravitation holds them together. But intellect in a peculiar manner tends to that which is of the same kin, and combines with it, and the feeling for communion is not interrupted. What do you wish, to continue to exist? Or do you wish to have sensation, movement, growth, and then again to cease to grow? Do you want to use your speech, to think? What is there of all these things which seems to you worth desiring? If it is easy to set little value on all these things, turn to that which remains, which is to follow reason and God. But it is inconsistent with honouring reason and God to be troubled that by death a man will be deprived of the other things. How small a part of the boundless and unfathomable time is assigned to every man! For it is very soon swallowed up in the eternal. And how small a part of the whole substance, and how small a part of the universal soul, and on what a small clod of the whole earth you creep! Reflecting on all this, consider nothing to be great, except to act as your nature leads you, and to endure that which the common nature brings. How does the ruling faculty, reason, understanding, make use of itself? For all lies in this. Everything else, whether it is in the power of your will or not, is only lifeless ashes and smoke. This reflection is most adapted to move us to contempt of death. Even those who think pleasure to be the sole good and pain an evil still have scorned it. The man to whom that only is good which comes in due season, and whose acts are all conformable to right reason, howsoever many acts they may be, and to whom it makes no difference whether he contemplates the world for a longer or a shorter time, for this man neither is death a terrible thing. Ah, man, you have been a citizen in this great state of the world. What difference does it make to you, whether for only 5 years or three? For that which is conformable to the laws is just for all. Where is the hardship, then, if no tyrant nor unjust judge sends you away from this state, but nature who brought you into it? The same as if a magistrate who has employed an actor dismisses him from the stage. But I have not finished. I have but performed 3 acts. True. But in life the 3 acts are the whole drama, for what shall be a complete drama is determined by him who was once the cause of its composition, and is now of its dissolution. But you are the cause of neither. Depart then satisfied, for he also who releases you is satisfied.